My name is Bailey Dumlau. I'm 19 years old. Today is November 20th, 2018, and I'm speaking with Olivia Gacka, who's my friend. We are recording this interview in Memphis, Tennessee. So, Olivia, what is your first memory of me?
My first memory of you is when Jason and I went to Eileen's house to rehearse the music for the last 5 years. And I knew exactly who you were, but I knew that we hadn't met. And I remember that like a solid hour went by before like anyone introduced us.
Yeah.
Because both Eileen and Jason assumed that we had met. And of course I knew of you because Jason's like talked about you before through like your school stuff. But like I was just sitting there kind of waiting for someone to be like, Olivia, this is Bailey. Bailey, this is Olivia. And of course no one ever did. So we just kind of talked anyway. I remember that. That was really funny. That was one of my more favorite ways to meet someone. Ridiculous.
Yeah. So we've known each other for a little under about a year-ish.
Yeah.
And what do you think makes us such good friends?
Snapchat, honestly. I honest to goodness, like this is something that I've learned over time is that like you don't have to see someone every day or even once a week to be friends with them. I think it's really interesting the way kind of people can connect over different things, and I think one of our things has been connecting over social media, particularly Snapchat and our group chat titled "Please Release My Family, Papa John. I've done everything you've asked." I think it was that night. There was a night that you and me and Eileen and Jason went to Huey's that really did it. That was the night that did it, I think. But I think the fact that we sort of have probably heard enough things about each other from other people first and then met, that we kind of got over that whole, like, are you a psychopath? I don't know. Probably not. We were able to skip right from that to, like, connecting over the show and things like that. And then we just kind of hit it off from there. And just, we love talking about people. And I think we have similar views, and we just kind of jive really well with similar people, which I think is important. I think like who your mutual friends are is a really great indicator of what kind of person you are, and I think that we have some really awesome mutual friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So, because you heard about me first and then met me, I want to flip that. So, like, how would you describe me to someone else?
Yeah, I would say that I would describe you as one of those very, I don't know if the word isn't talented, you're talented.
Wow, okay.
You're very blank for your age. And I don't know if it's mature or wise or talented. Like I'm trying to think, but like you have a lot more initiative than a lot of people your age that I've seen. Like you designed the lighting for our show and basically took over stage management and like all these things just because you wanted to, and that's a lot of initiative for someone your age specifically. And I think like that's how I would describe you, as being very impressive for your age. Impressive is a good word, I would say. And very much a jack of multiple trades, and that's really rare, I think, for someone in high school. I think it's not until college when you major in theater and you have to take lighting and you have to take acting and you have to take a set building module or whatever, that you become more of a fleshed out kind of person. But you kind of went into college with that interest and with that sort of mindset. So I would say that's probably how it is. And also you're hilarious. I would probably throw that in too. But that's how I would describe you.
So then how would you describe yourself to another person?
I would describe myself as, it's really hard. Probably someone who is figuring out how to do the things that I like to do. I know what I like to do. I'm still figuring out how to get them all sort of incorporated into the same life.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, you know, when I was in Rhodes, when I was in Memphis, people found it really hard to believe I was about to go to Ireland and study Irish history. And then when I was in Ireland, people found it really hard to believe that I ever was an actor or a singer, because those were such different parts of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm probably a kind of wide range of interests, and I don't quite know how to synthesize them yet. And I think I'm the kind of person who's probably going to spend my entire life trying to find ways to merge those things.
Mm-hmm.
I would describe myself as a decent human. I'm a dog mom. I'm a a pal, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just the general stuff. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you think we'll ever lose touch with each other?
Heck no. Heck no. Sticking to the heck, because this is a school project.
This is a school project.
but yeah, absolutely not. I think, and that's another thing that I learned very much, it's not the hard way, I learned it the easy way, that you stay in touch with the people that you want to. Like, mm-hmm. I was away from all of my friends for a year, and I stayed in some ways in better touch with some people because I was farther away. Mm-hmm. So I think in this day and age, it's not about lack of convenience. It's not about, like, my friend moved away and the telegrams won't go that fast. It's very much about, like, who you care enough about staying connected with. And, I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, I don't plan on losing touch with you.
No, certainly not.
Are you telling me something?
Well, maybe. No, wow. I'm never, ever.
Yeah, no.
I think that we can always be...
I'm like always, I'm definitely always interested in being your friend, but also I can see us collaborating on a lot of more projects in the future, so mm-hmm. I don't think I'm planning on letting go of you anymore.
Which is totally fine with me.
You will not be released from my clutches.
So, okay, obviously you have a background in theater. Mm-hmm. So, what was like your first experience with the arts?
Okay, so that's kind of tough. Let's go all the way back. When my mother was 8 months pregnant with me, she went to see Phantom of the Opera. That's the first one that I can remember. And I blame her now for everything. Because yeah. I was 8 months old, I could hear, not 8 months old, but I could hear everything probably, and that's a lot. And mm-hmm. so I think that she's the reason. And then I was born in Westchester, New York, so it was a half hour away from Manhattan, and so I think my first musical was when I was 3 years old, and I saw Bernadette Peters and Annie Get Your Gun. That was my first watching experience. My first experience participating in theater was also when I was 3 years old, I think, and my preschool was doing Cinderella, and I was Cinderella. And I got the role because my cubby was the cleanest, but I thought that I was talented, so then I decided to do this with my
So, how do those experiences affect your present life, if at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I think that I was given the best possible start. Like, my very early influences were, like, Bernadette Peters, seeing the revival of 42nd Street on Broadway, seeing Wicked a few months after it opened with the original cast, and like all these things like were at my doorstep. And I think that that is something that I did not realize was not normal mm-hmm. for most people. And I think I was given a very, very lucky early start. I was given a really good foundation that I think has given me a better sense of what I like and don't like than I would have had. I think, not to say that I have a better eye than other people because of where I happen to be watching theater, but I think that my early years were less about instinct and more about what I was exposed to. Mm-hmm. So I do think that it has impacted me in that I had really easy access to seeing a lot of things that otherwise, like, I wasn't gonna fly across the country to see the Pirate Queen, but we happened to be there, so why not go see it? So I was really exposed to a very wide range of things that maybe I otherwise wouldn't have sought out. So I think I have a more well-rounded understanding of theater than I would have if it hadn't been so close to me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think I was very lucky in that way. And being able, my parents were always really supportive of me watching theater and being in it. Like, when I was in fourth grade, my mom found me like a children's theater thing to join. And like, that was like my first non-school after school activity, I think. And like, she was very supportive of that, and like everyone in my family came to see me. So I think I was given that early foundation was really important in encouraging me to make that my life now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to hear more about that children's theater, actually. I'm interested.
Okay.
So you started working with them in around fourth grade, you said.
Yes.
So about how long do you stay with them? What kind of things do you do with them?
Right. So I started with them in fourth grade. So this is the great thing about being born when I was, I know what year, this is like a long-winded explanation, but I know what grade I was in based on the year. In 2004, I was going into fourth grade. So this is how I know these things. So I was going into fourth grade. So I must have been like 10 or 9 or something. And I joined this theater, and I stayed there until 2010, which is when I moved to St. Louis, Missouri. And we did a different show every year. So there was like a younger age group, and then there was a middle age group, and then there was like a teenagers and adults. So I started in the middle age group. I was never in the youngest one. And we started with Peter Pan. My first role was Wendy. And then the next year we did Sound of Music. And so they had alternating casts. So you'd usually have about two or three roles. So I, in Sound of Music, I was Maria in one show, and then I was Mother Abbess in another. And then the year after that, we did Grease, and I was Sandy. And then I think I was, who's the annoying girl in Grease? Is it Poppy Penny? Patty! Patty's her name. Patty. Patty. I know it was Patty. Grease was a fun one because that started this weird... That started this weird thing with this kid where the guy who played Danny in the last scene hit me in the face with the leather jacket when he was supposed to... And that was the first majorly embarrassing moment of my life. Because it was filmed.
Oh, no.
It was awful. And then I think... Oh, God. Then we did Little Shop of Horrors, and I was Audrey. And then my last year there, we did Fame, and I was Carmen. I think that was a really fun... It was a great experience because it got me out of the house, and it gave me... stage exposure. So the really important thing to know is that I was not talented easily until high school, if not college, high school, because throughout the entire process, I didn't know that you needed to act until the show. So like I'd be in rehearsal and I would be reading my script and I'd be like, yeah, Peter, don't go. I want to go to Neverland. Like I just didn't know that you were supposed to... And I thought it would be weird to act until the show. And that was where I learned that wasn't cool. And that was an important thing for me to learn because, for obvious reasons. But it was a good exposure to sort of what theater is, live theater is like, and not school theater. Mm-hmm. I think that was important. And so that by the time I left there, I had a lot of experience with musical theater choreography and singing and performing and memorizing a script and all these things. And I also got a lot of backstage experience working there for the younger kid shows. Mm-hmm. So it was a really a valuable experience. And it was great because I had one of my best friends also did it, and we became even closer that way. And it was a really good idea for me to do that because it gave me a solid foundation going into high school that I could take on better roles and could pick up choreography very quickly and things like that. It continued that foundation, I think, going forward, and made me a better performer and a performer at all, because otherwise I wouldn't have done half as much as I had.
Mm-hmm. So who would you say is your biggest motivator?
Good Lord. Probably my parents, because they've always been very inspiring. They've always motivated me in all things, really. And they're not just kind of my motivators, they're my motivation. Like I've said this to them, like everything I do in the hopes that they will be proud of me. And I know that I know that they already are, so I could probably just stop now and they'd be like, yeah, she was cool, but but like I also am always looking to continue making them proud of me. Mm-hmm. Not that I've ever doubted it, but I think part of that stems from I'm their only child, and I'm also, they didn't have me until they'd already been married for like 21 years.
Oh, wow.
So it was they've always, because of when I was born at a later point in their marriage and my dad's career, such that I was definitely, they were in a better place financially 21 years after they were married versus like they were poor when they got married. So I understand how lucky I was to be born when I was, because it gave me, they were able to send me to good schools, and they were able to give me and send me to Broadway shows that were God knows how expensive and things like that. So I think my biggest motivation is always trying to be worthy of that, and to live up to it, and to exceed whatever expectation is set. And I think that's a thing that a lot of people my age are finding that is almost scary, is that like every generation, I think until this one, has been richer than the one before. And this, like obviously the millennials, we can't buy diamonds and we're buying houses so we can give yards to our dogs. Like it's a very different thing. And it's been very scary to think about how I will not be following the track that my dad did, which was born dirt poor in like a steel town, and then goes on to be a senior vice president of some of you know, some big company. That's not going to be my life. And it took a lot for me to realize that that was okay and that it wasn't letting anybody down and it wasn't the wrong path and it wasn't not being worthy of the opportunities they gave me. So a big thing that motivates me is to fight that and to continue to realize that just being happy and being successful, whatever that means for me, is making my parents proud and is living up to that. So that does keep me going. Keeps me inspired.
So I know that from being in this community that you're very close with Cecilia Wingate. So how did that relationship come about?
Okay, so how that started was I was a junior at Rhodes and they announced that we were going to do the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee for the musical in the spring. I guess the winter. And Cecilia Wingate was going to direct.
Oh, okay.
And I knew of her already for a couple of years because one of my best friends, Haley Townsend, was in her ensembles like a million times. And so I knew of her, but I didn't know her. And I knew everything about her, but I didn't know her.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the producers, which happened in 2015, the fall of 2015 at Theater Memphis, Haley took me outside to meet Cecilia. And I was so scared of her and about how stupid I would probably sound. And anyway, then she started coming in for production meetings with the staff at the McCoy Theater of Rhodes. And she like remembered my name. It was the funniest thing. She was like, Olivia, could you get me a pencil? And I was like, you know my name? And then I auditioned for the show, for Spelling Bee. And it was a really scary process because I ended up playing Rona Peretti, who's one of three adults in the show, the only adult woman. And I was really scared because I auditioned, I was called back, but no one knew what they were called back for. Mm-hmm. And I was called back, and there were like five adult women in the room who she had called back to look at for Rona. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not gonna be in this show because I can't play a kid. But if she's casting real adults, I can't play an adult. And so then I was called back for a second round of callbacks and I came with like two bras on and pigtails. I was like, I have to sell myself as a kid. We still didn't know what we were called back for.
Yeah.
And then she said, everybody go get up and walk around except for Olivia. And I was like, and it was so scary because I still didn't know her. She's still such an like imposing kind of figure, you know. I was like, oh my God, what's happening? And she said, Olivia, I think you're going to be Rona, but you have to prove to me that you can be an adult. And like, I'm in like a compression bra and like my pigtails. And I was like, one moment, please. And I ran to the bathroom and I took it out and I like put eyeliner on. It was the worst. It was the worst moment of my life. And then I eventually got the role and became decent friends with her through that. But it was really... it was after that I started going to her porch, which I'm sure everyone, you know, the infamous Cecilia Wingate porch. It was around election. It was around the election, the 2016 mm-hmm. election. I was going over to her house with Haley to watch the debates. And then I was there for election night. And that's kind of when I became friends with her. And then I invited her to come see Heathers, the musical, when I directed it at Rhodes for my senior project. And she came, and that was really awesome. And then after that, she asked me to come on and assist them direct Shrek, the musical Theater Memphis with mm-hmm. her. And which meant I got to stay in Memphis for the summer and meet all these people. And, you know, she was so supportive and, like, immediately became part my mentor, part my mother. And that was really, that's kind of how that started. And then we stayed in touch while I was in Ireland because I left the morning after the opening night of Shrek for Ireland, and then we stayed in touch the whole year. And then before I came back, she asked me to come on as the assistant director for Spelling Bee, which we just did at Theater Memphis. And now she's asked me to come on as a production assistant for her next show, 1776. And just all that while, I've kind of become, she has a daughter, Olivia, who's my age, mm-hmm. born a couple, like a month before me, I think. And we look very similar. So a lot of people confuse me for her, but like she really has become my mom, but also just the most amazing mentor. She's done so much for me. She has helped me and taught me so much, but also just given me opportunities. And it has been my favorite thing that has happened to me in Memphis, probably. I love her a lot. And she is just I realize every single day how lucky I am that she just chose to like me because she is one of, I personally think she is the greatest director in Memphis, and many, many people would agree with me, and many Ostranders and many other awards would agree with me and support my claim. And I realize that that makes me very lucky to be one of her people, and that's been, it's been another good foundation. I've been very lucky to have several good layers of foundation in my life that kind of put me in a really great path to being a better artist, and director, and actor, human.
So, how would you think your life would have turned out? How would it have been different without the arts?
Jeez. I'd be so, I don't even know who I'd be. Like, I'm not, like, my boyfriend, for example, is someone who, like, didn't do theater at all until high school, college, or whatever, and if he didn't have that, he'd be fine. He'd be doing music or something, you know, he was, like, a physics minor, all these things. Like, he'd have other things. I don't know who I would be or what I would be. I think I'd be a husk of a woman. I don't think I'd be a person. I don't know what kind of person I'd be. I think, I don't know. Like, the theater in my life has turned me towards so many of the things that I do. It's turned me towards sociology. It's turned me towards my interest in Irish history and just and all of that. Like, there's just so many vital parts of me that wouldn't have happened if it didn't stem from an interest in theater. Theater wasn't the driving force behind it. I think I'd be a lot less fun to be around, or more fun, depending on who you ask. I might be a little less annoying. I don't really know, but I can say with absolute certainty that I would be a total opposite of who I am right now. There is nothing about me, I don't think, that would be the same. But yeah, I'd definitely be a lot sadder.
So you went and got your master's in Ireland. What was the most important thing you learned while you were over there for such a long time?
Oof, yeah, so long. I missed you so much. So long. That's a good question. What did I learn? I think that I learned, I just had so many opportunities that made it very hard to just learn one. But I think I did get a better indicator of what I am capable of. Because I'm fine. Like, I know that I'm, like, a fine, functional human. Nothing's wrong with me. But I guess I'd never really thought of myself as particularly interesting or impressive, more so than anyone down the street from me. But, you know, everyone saying over and over, like, wow, you left the country by yourself for a year. That's terrifying. And it didn't quite occur to me that that was a leap in any way until till people started telling me it was. So that, like, I mean, if anything, it was a really big confidence boost, and it was a very helpful sort of reminder that while I have deep anxiety, I am a lot more fearless than I thought. I think that was important to know, because it made me more confident in myself. And it also, sometimes when you're in a bubble of one school for so many years, and, you know, you do pretty much the same, like, you get the same grades the whole time, you're kind of like, is this fake? Is this The Sims, and someone's just giving me the same grades because I need to pass and they like me? It's going to a whole new school in a whole new school system and doing as well, if not better, was also, like, it was a kind of a little knock on your head, like, yeah, you are smart, you're doing great. And It really just did show me what I am capable of, and it taught me a lot about, yeah, you can write 3 chapters of a dissertation in 3 months, and you can work at the National Theatre of Ireland and hold a conversation with, like, Stephen Ray and the directors of the Abbey Theatre, and you can take a master class with Gary Hines, who was the first woman to win a Tony for Best Direction of a Play. She's my icon. And I took a week-long masterclass with her, and I said things that she agreed with. And I was like, well, I must be fine. I must, like, doing things like that really, like, it affirmed to me that I'm decently fine. And, like, you know, I am smarter than I give myself credit for. I'm not a genius, but it's really easy to put yourself down and to be shown that you shouldn't be as harsh on yourself as you are, is, I think, valuable wherever you can get it.
So, I know that you went to Ireland and got your master's, but I want to know more about, like, what exactly you did while you were there and what it's in and what brought you to that point.
Sure. So, do you want me to start with how I got there?
Yes.
Or, okay. So, my sophomore year at Rhodes, I needed an elective, or I needed another class, and there was an elective in Irish, it was actually called 20th century British literature, which is very wrong. If you know anything about Ireland, you know that the Irish will live and die saying they could be anything but British, and it's so true. So it's amazing that the registrar listed the class as that, but it was Irish theater, and there was a professor named Brian Schaefer, still is, who taught that class, because he was a he's a Joyce scholar, and he's a professor of English at Rhodes, and now he's also the associate provost of the college. It's amazing. And he offered this course, and it just changed my life. It was, I've always loved theater, and I've always loved plays and all these things, but I've never read a whole genre of plays that I was just like, I get it, and I love it, all of it. No part of it do I not love. No part of it does not make sense. Like, I just loved it, and it made sense. I was fascinated by the history. It was also the same time that I was developing my bridge major in anthropology, sociology, and theater, which was anchored in this idea that theater comments on and creates social change. There's a symbiotic relationship between society and theater, and Irish theater was a perfect example of that, because Irish theater, the Irish cultural revival is what they call it, happened at the same time as their political revolution. And that is no mistake, that is no accident. And I think that that is so important, and how deeply connected their rise in nationalism, not the unhealthy kind, was with their theater and their cultural developments, and their efforts to say, this is who the Irish are, at the same time as they were saying, this is the Irish state, British go away. So that was fascinating to me. And then it went away for a year, and then it was time for me to decide where I was going to study abroad. I was choosing between Italy and Ireland, and everyone was telling me to go to Italy, because why not? And why would you go to Ireland? It rains there, and there's no good food. Whereas Italy's the exact opposite. But I wanted to go to Ireland. So I went there summer before my senior year of college, and I loved it. And I said, I have to come back. I have to come back. I went to Galway, which is on the very westernmost coast of Ireland. And it's where, like, the Cliffs of Moher is and everything. And I went to the National University of Ireland, Galway, for my summer studies. And I subscribed to their booklet about their master's programs. And I was perusing it in my first couple months of my senior year at Rhodes. And in it was a new master's that they had made the year before in Irish theater history and archives. And I was like, bam, 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 bam. All of those things are the things that I love. Like, I was so interested in the history, and I was so interested in the history of the Irish theater, and the archives component was really valuable in terms of marketing myself as employable, because it offered to teach, like, actual skills in, like, the handling and preservation of very old paper. Which sounds sarcastic, but I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
And so I applied on a whim. What I was going to do is I was going to wait and apply the next year and apply as a Fulbright, and apply for a Fulbright. But I applied first just to see if I'd get in. You know, do I have to do any work to work on this? And that wasn't smart, because what happened was I applied in November and I found out the first week of December that I was accepted and that I had 30 days to decide if I was going to accept the offer, because they do rolling admissions every month. It was so stressful. Every month they accept a month of applicants, and then they make decisions, give you 30 days to decide, and however many people accept, those places are taken up for the next round, and then they go until they're full. And I was like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? And so I took 30 days, and I talked about it with my parents, and they were floored because they didn't even know I applied, because it didn't cost anything to apply, and I didn't have to take the GRE, so they were like, what's happening? And I thought about it for a month, and then I think on like the 29th of December, I said, why not? And I committed to go. So I knew, I was very lucky. I was one of the first people, of all of my friends, who knew what the heck they were gonna do after graduation, which was very, very lucky. So I went straight into grad school after. Well, I spent the summer in Memphis doing Shrek, and then August of 2017, I moved to Ireland, and I moved back to Galway to get my master's at the National University, and basically kind of what I did every day was I took classes in Irish theater history. There was a semester of the late 1800s to the 1940s, and then the next semester was 1940s to present. And yeah, it's probably fair to say. And I took classes in directing. I took an elective in directing. I took a class on writing for and about theater, so like literary criticism, but also reviews, which was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think I'm a critic, which is what that class taught me. Yeah, so that was really great. And I also got to do all these things. I got to see so much free theater, which is really probably the best part, was just the exposure. I got to go to the Abbey and Druid Theater for free so many times. And I got to see so much of the country and meet so many incredible artists, because Ireland's like the size of Kansas. So so imagine if all of the famous people in your field live in Kansas. It's mm-hmm. easy to bump into them.
Yeah.
So like I did, like on the street and in master classes and in workshops, and like once a week we had people in the field come and talk to us and things. So my year was genuinely spent seeing free theater, learning about things that I was already learning about in my spare time, writing papers about them, hanging out with like-minded people, and just getting to be in the most beautiful country in the world, and getting to see, like, live in a place where all of your food comes from no more than 3 hours away, mm-hmm. and where your president is a democratic socialist, which is crazy. His name is Michael D. Higgins, and you should Google him because he's adorable. yeah, so it was really just a year spent in a total dream. It was just a total dream.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't making any work, but I was learning so much and seeing so much, which a lot of people will tell you is just as important as making work, is seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really hit the lottery with that one. Yeah.
That's really interesting. So tell me about the project you've worked on that is the thing you're most proud of.
Yeah, okay. So the beginning of my senior year at Rhodes, I knew that we weren't going to do a musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it very clear that that was a bad idea to a lot of people. And a lot of people agreed with me that it was a bad idea, but also a lot of other people did not care enough to do anything about it. And the season was set and it was what it was. But the problem was that I was on this kick, and I still am on this kick, that musicals are valuable and musical theater can be as much as you... that musical theater can be as valuable as you care to make it. So mm-hmm. I knew that my senior project was coming up, and that I, since it was a bridge major, I had a little more leeway in doing something big and interesting. And what I decided to do was apply for the rights to do Heather's the Musical at Rhodes, which had not been done before in Memphis. So it was gonna be a regional premiere. And it would have been really exciting, and I've been trying to get the school to do it for years, but they didn't want to. Or I think it was my junior year that they applied for the rights, but they weren't giving them to schools at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year they just didn't try again.
Yeah.
And I said, I will. And a lot of people, I'm telling you, literally everyone told me not to. Even people who support me and encourage me and love me very much said, you will die. You will be so miserable. Do not do this. And I knew that they were probably right, but I did not care, because the fact was that we had a lot of freshmen and sophomores at Rhodes who were supremely talented and were not getting any opportunities in musical theater, and were going to transfer if we did not do something. And a couple did. A couple mm-hmm. transferred and left Rhodes. And we weren't going to get any new students. Like, people weren't going to come for musical theater or theater, because usually if you're a high school student, your main exposure is, or your main pull is musical theater.
Yeah.
So if there isn't even one musical, you're not going to get people to come. So I applied for the rights, paid for that myself up front, and then immediately when I got the rights, started spreading the word. People were really interested and engaged with the idea, and I pitched it as a combination theater and sociology project. So the reason I pitched Heather's was because I thought it had a lot of value sociologically, with in terms of how it dealt with things like suicide and depression and the idea of the school as society. There's literally a line in the end of the show people are going to see the ashes of Westerbury High School and think there's a school that self-destructed, not because society doesn't care, but because that school was society. That's one of the final lines of the show. Like, could you be any more clear?
Mm-hmm.
How perfectly it fit. And so I applied for the rights and got it approved from the anthro-social department that was going to be my project. And I had auditions, and I immediately began a fundraiser, and I knew I slashed the budget from what an average musical at Rhodes cost. Slashed it in half. Mm-hmm. And then took a few other thousand out because I didn't need to pay myself, and I didn't pay anyone but the band, I think. And then everyone else I paid, like I paid the props person for the props that they paid money for, and I paid the costume designer for things that she bought. Mm-hmm. But other than that, no, everyone did it for free. Which was a big part of it was that, like, I think what was so extraordinary was how easy it was to get people to do it because they wanted to.
Yeah.
And I'm still so grateful for all those people because, yeah, it was for them, but it was also, like, it was my senior project, and it would never have happened without those people. So we held auditions, we cast the whole thing, and then we had rehearsals from January to March of 2017, and all the while that I was directing and producing the show and made the budget and distributed the budget and kept track of the money and raised the money, I was also developing a talk back with the audience, which I conducted and which happened after every night of the four performances that we had. And I kind of up front at the beginning of the show at the curtain speech said, this is part of my senior project. Please stay after if you would like to talk about sort of the themes in the show and what you recognized and what you found interesting. And let me just prompt you a little bit and see what I found interesting. And do you agree? Do you not? So we did that afterwards, and it was so wildly successful. We sold out every night. We ended up having to add a row of people who were willing to sit on the floor and not in a chair to watch that show. Like, it was... And it was so good. Like,
it was.
I keep forgetting that you were there. Because I didn't know you yet. But yeah, I mean, like, it was one of those things that, like, it should have been a disaster. Because, first of all, and I hate to say this, but I will, some of the people who most opposed me doing it were the theater department.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want me to do it in the main stage of the theater because they didn't want to seem as though that they were saying that someone who wasn't trained in directing could be a director.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's because you haven't offered me a directing course.
Yeah.
So I did it anyway. And you know, it was, so it should have by all accounts been a disaster, but it wasn't because I had such an enthusiastically talented cast who did everything with such passion. Like, they were there because they wanted to be there. At Rhodes, you usually get course credit for being in a show. They were not getting that. No one was getting paid. Everyone was giving up their life because they wanted to do this show and this specific show, as mm-hmm. I have been saying for years. And we did, like, a cast talk back to prep the talk back stuff to see what was working, what wasn't. And I asked them one question. At the audience talk backs, I usually had to be like, so what do you think of this? What do you think of that? I asked one question at the cast talk back, and then I literally didn't say anything the rest of the time. They had their own ideas. They were into it. They got the concept, and they were such leaders in the talk backs. I still get floored every time I think about, like, this is why it's my example of what I'm most proud of, because I don't know how I'm ever going to top it, because mm-hmm. I just don't, like, the whole thing was run on a basic disregard for my own personal health, finances, interest, all of it. It was all born from, this is a cool idea, other people will benefit from this, and it's a good idea. And also, a lot of it was to prove a point, which is petty, but it's true. And I did prove a point. We sold more tickets in 4 days in a smaller space than all the other shows in the other 3 years that I've been at the McCoy.
Wow.
So I can't imagine how much we would have sold if we had been in the main stage and run for 2 weeks. So that's the thing that I'm most proud of, was that that was my little last love letter to Rhodes, was there you go, do what you will with that. Mm-hmm. And that people who were freshmen in that show are now, like, my TD, the guy who was my technical director and set designer for that show, is now a director himself. He's a senior now, and he's a director. And just things like that, or he's a junior. But, like, those things make me proud, was that, like, that was their first musical at Rhodes.
Yeah.
Because I think the way underclassmen become who they are as upperclassmen as they learn from the upperclassmen before them, either in the good way or the bad way. They either say, you sucked, I'm going to do the opposite, or you say, I want to be that person. And I do I'm not, God, I could never take credit for what everyone else ended up doing in their lives, but I do feel proud that I gave some people a solid foundation. I'm very big on foundations. I gave some people a strong foundation from which to go forward, and that felt really good.
Interesting. Okay, so the last question I have for you is, how will you pass on this passion you have for the arts to a future generation, or to, like, future generations way past your time?
Lordy. Well, I guess, I mean, this is a good, what a good transition, because, like, I think part of what you can do is just lead by doing, and by, like, a lot of what I've ever done in the arts has been the person I wish I had. Like, when I was a freshman, I wish that I had seen those seniors, or, you know, or the ones that I did see, I wanted to emulate. And I think that you can do a lot by being, for the most immediate generation behind you, is do by being and just be that person that you wish you had seen when you were younger. Or be the person that you wanted to be. And that there's a lot more to it than that, obviously. It's a lot more work, and there's a lot more time than as simple as saying, just do the thing. But I think that, I guess another thing is opening up avenues for understanding different ways to love the arts. Like, and I think that it's important to understand that some people approach it from a scientific perspective, or a mathematics or a physics perspective. You know, some people find the arts through tech, and that doesn't sound like it should make sense, but now more than ever it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to make sense for theater to survive. It has to embrace a lot more technological complexities, and you need to help people love theater who want to do that. And I think it's important to also continue to push the boundaries of what is considered the ingenue, which is a phrase I hate. Hate it so much. And I get it. I do. But you have to keep pushing who the ingenue looks like, or who that is.
Fighting those archetypes.
Fight it hard. And, you know, questioning, does this role have to be played by this kind of person? And not just filling in gaps as in, like, switching genders or switching up races or things like that, but also encouraging people who are writing stories about other kinds of people. Because it is not enough to just make Shakespeare characters black and white now. Like, that's nice. It's really cool and important because it allows other populations to reclaim material that previously was inaccessible to them, or they weren't allowed to do or had no claim to. And that's important, but I think it's equally important to support new work and make new work canon. Like, find a new Phantom of the Opera, find a new Wicked's a bad example because Wicked, I think, is a huge allegory for race, but, like, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that that's so vital, because the thing about theater is 100 years from now, no one's ever gonna see, unless it's recorded, anything that I do, but the work, the physical text, will live. The performances, which is the nature of theater, will not live, but the text will. So I think that creating a space for diversified text is really, really important. But also, in order to make that text live, you have to perform it now so that people idolize it 100 years from now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, so it's kind of a big balance of things like that. I think that would be what I would hope to do, is to continue to impress upon people that there's a space for everyone who wants to be here in theater. And if it's not here, let's find it, let's make it, let's smash some stuff and make you something. Because I think that that's the only way that you're going to get people, is by helping them see themselves there. And I guess one more thing.
Yeah.
One more, I think another thing would be kind of helpful is expressing the power of theater specifically, because high school plays are great and a lot of people get a lot out of them, but I do think that part of the reason that no one takes musicals seriously is because no one takes musicals seriously, and everyone's like, let's do this, and that's great, the end. Let's do it because it's fun, and that's why we're doing it. And yeah, you know, like, that's great, but I think that there does need to be more intention towards taking forms of theater seriously. And I think that if I could do anything, I think I would find space for supporting work that is diverse and exciting, but also I would find that in musical theater specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world of plays is really starting to do that, but in musicals it's less so. But I think that musicals have a capacity for finding that space in an even more enriching way, and that's advocating for that, for taking that more seriously would be helpful.
Well, thank you so much for going on this
journey.
This is a really, really great piece of conversation we've had. Mm-hmm. I'm just so thankful for it all, but thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Wow.